This summer, there is a huge soccer tournament. Maybe you've heard of it. Unfortunately, the United States men's team did not make it, but Iceland did. Reykjavik is recruiting you to be an honorary Icelander and cheer for Iceland this summer. Iceland is the smallest nation to ever qualify, and they also take the field in red, white, and blue. It's a perfect match. When you cheer for Iceland, you get to do the Icelandic Viking chant. It's easy. Just follow along with me. Well, something like that. And most importantly, Iceland makes delicious Reykja vodka, perfect for celebrating any victory. So go to Reykja.com to get Team Iceland gear and find a viewing party near you. That's Reykja.com. Real fans drink responsibly. Reykja vodka, 40% alcohol by volume, 80 proof, distilled from grain. Copyright 2018 William Grant & Sons, New York, New York. This episode of the Press Row Podcast is also brought to you by Out of the Park Developments. And guess what? The Steam Summer Sale is going on right now. And you can get Out of the Park Baseball 19 for 50% off. Just go to Steam and look for Out of the Park Baseball. It's right there. And Franchise Hockey Manager 4 is also 50% off of the already reduced price. So you can get it for just 10 bucks. That's right. Out of the Park Baseball 19, 20 bucks. Franchise Hockey Manager 4, 10 bucks. An unbelievable deal. It is the Steam Summer Sale. All of our games are 50% off. Go check it out on Steam today. Out of the Park Baseball 19 and Franchise Hockey Manager 4. Enjoy the show.
We're in the midst of the World Cup. We're about halfway through the MLB season, and that's of special interest to me. Baseball has finally gotten fun up here in the Pacific Northwest. We're also about to enter NBA free agency, which is arguably more compelling than the actual NBA season. So it's a great time to be a sports fan, but, and we're still in a bit of a holding pattern as far as the upcoming slate of sports games go. Despite that, we're going to be getting into some NBA Live 19 news, some Madden NFL 19 news, and we'll be taking a bunch of listener questions. This is actually kind of a Dodcast crossover episode here, because we've got Rich Grisham and we've got Pete Dodd. Rich, how you been doing, man?
Been doing fantastic, Brian. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. And Pete, it's great to have you back on.
Yeah, thanks a bunch for having me.
So, Rich, you want to start with what you've been playing recently?
Sure. So, I've got World Cup fever. I've been watching the World Cup as much as possible. I've been playing FIFA World Cup.
But your Germans, they're gone.
Well, my English are not, however, right? Yeah. Because Grisham, it's a fine English name. And so I have pledged my allegiances this real World Cup to England. I've always, they haven't won it since the late 60s. It's hard to root against England in the World Cup. It's, you know. But I've also, of course, been playing a lot of FIFA World Cup. Brian, if you remember, I attempted to win the World Cup with Germany and was bounced in the quarterfinals.
Well, you did better. you did better than they did.
That's true. I did significantly better than they did. I then attempted to win the World Cup. Oh shoot, who was it with? It was Germany. I'm blanking on it. I'll remember a second. But my third attempt.
So it wasn't very memorable.
It was definitely not. It was definitely not. My third attempt to win the World Cup was with Spain, and unlike my first two, my first Germany, then England. Right, that was my second attempt. Was with England. With both Germany and England, I got bounced in the quarterfinals. So then I attempted my third attempt with Spain, and I advanced pretty easily out of the group and, relatively speaking, pretty easily into the semifinals, and then played a very, very talented Argentina in the semifinals and won 2-0, as you are obligated to call 0 in soccer, or should I say football. And I thought I was going to basically have my way with the Uruguayans in the final. However, I got down 2-0, only to storm back in the second half and tie the match in the 87th minute 2-2. And then there were 2 15-minute overtimes, and it was still tied 2-2, Brian, and it went to penalty kicks. Have you ever done penalty kicks in FIFA, Brian?
I have, and I've practiced enough to actually make the shots, and I'm not especially creative at them, but enough to, all right, I know how to direct them, because I've done the mini game, the shooting mini game. What I'm awful at is trying to stop penalty kicks, where it's just flick the right stick, I think, and then my guy goes one or the other, and I hope I guessed right. But yeah, I'm not especially good at that.
Pete, have you attempted penalty kicks in FIFA?
Other than the mini game during loading screens, like in like prior versions, I can't even remember if they're in this version or not. No, not really.
It's terrible. I'm a huge fan of FIFA. It's not as good as Pro Evo, but it's really good. And the penalty kicks are just terrible. Not terrible because of the concept. The concept is perfectly fine. The actual execution is atrocious. And I'm not just saying that because I'm bad at them. I am bad at them. That's a factual statement. But what happens is, the first thing you have to do in a penalty kick in FIFA is hold the B button down for the power. So that's fine. In FIFA, shooting power and sort of knowing intrinsically when to pull up on that B button is the difference between being good and being terrible. You know, our friend Jeremy Stein, who's been on the show a bunch of times, who we play in our online FIFA leagues, is a complete savant. And for some reason, he has just learned the exact amount of time down to the microsecond as to when to lift up the B button, because he can score from anywhere he really wants to in FIFA, and not just with great players, even with perfectly ordinary players, he can do that. It's a real skill. And if you hold the B button down too long in FIFA, even a little bit, the ball goes flying off 100 yards into the stands. And if you let go too early, you barely nudge the ball forward, and the goaltender picks it up and laughs at you with the weakness of your shot. So I understand that you have to get it right. So the first thing you do is hold the B button down for the power. Then once you're done with that, then you take the stick and you are supposed to aim, you know, up, down, left, right, which is fine. And then you see the arrow pointing. But if you veer a little bit too far to the right or to the left, it just goes completely into the red and then you're finished. You can't recover. It doesn't let you move it back. And so for the first penalty kick, so here's the penalty kick situation. They go first, Uruguay does and scores. And then I go next and I place it the right power, the right location in the lower left corner, and the goaltender stops it. Okay, I'm fine with that. It wasn't a great kick, but had he not guessed diving exactly in the right direction, it would have been 1-1. The second Uruguayan takes it, scores. The second time I do it, I hold B down, I get it to mid-green, and I go subtly to push the stick to the left, and I push a little too far, and it goes hard red, and the controller shakes, and I kick it way off to the right, 10 yards from the post. And then the third Uruguayan steps up, puts it in, because as you said, Brian, as a goaltender, you have no chance. It doesn't work. I can't stop them. I guessed the same direction three times in a row, and all three times they didn't kick it in that direction.
Yeah, well, what is it? 80%, I think.
Yes, of course. But you're supposed to score on a penalty kick. Like, the goaltender doesn't really have a chance on penalty kicks. That's how it is, and that's fine. But I went exactly the same way all three times, and they never even kicked it anywhere close to there, which is fine. Again, not really so mad about that. And then on my third kick, the same exact thing happens. I hold it, the B button for the power, gets to a middle green, and this time I try to nudge it a little to the left, and I push it a little too far, and all of a sudden goes completely red, and the controller shakes, and he shanks it so far off to the left, it's an embarrassment, and that's the end of the World Cup. I mean, come on! That's terrible! Your penalty kicks, and this has, I'm sure, been a problem for years. I just never have penalty kicks, or not never, but rarely. What was funny, in our FIFA Online League Year 1, I was playing our great friend Adrian Todd Zuniga, and he is, he's an insane player, and he fouled me multiple times in the zone, and I got a penalty kick, and I actually made it, and I told him, that's the first penalty kick I've made in FIFA probably in 3 years. So, anyway, I lost the World Cup on penalty kicks in the final, which was unfortunate. Not unfortunate because I lost, but because of the frustrating way in which I lost, because the penalty kick mechanics in FIFA. Yes, Corey Andrus, I'm talking to you right now. You work for FIFA. This is your fault. I should have at least made the goaltender make a save attempt. Come on. So, love the game. I'm debating whether to start again. And the nice thing about it is if you want to have a run at the World Cup, you know, you can knock it out in an hour and a half if you really want to, right? It's, you know, three group games and then, you know, round of 16, quarters, semis, done. Like, you're talking seven games maximum. You know, if you're really, if you want to, like, you know what, for the next 2 hours, I just want to do the World Cup, you can easily do that, which is why it's kind of nice. So today, Brian, as we record, was the last day of the group stage. So there's still the whole knockout round to go in the World Cup, which if you've been enjoying the group stage of the World Cup, as I have, oh my gosh, wait till the groups, wait till the knockout stage. It's going to be fantastic. And it's on all weekend in the morning. This is great. I'm so happy about this. I'm going to be watching all the games. I'm so happy. So I'm angry about the penalty kicks. I'm wondering, okay, so I've taken Germany, I've taken England, I've taken Spain. Who should I take in my next attempt? Should it be Argentina? Should I put the United States in there and see if I can get out of the group? Because that's an option that you have. Should I take, like I said, Argentina, the United States? There's some other. Should I take Belgium? Romelu Lukaku, who played for Everton for years, one of my favorite players. He's on
Belgium. If you want to go with the team that would give you the best chance of winning, that'd be Brazil.
Yeah, Brazil. I haven't taken Brazil.
Yeah.
I mean, they're obviously, like you say, ridiculously loaded with talent. I thought I could do it with Spain. I almost did it with Spain. And the funny thing is, I really don't know that many of the Spanish players. I watch mostly the Premier League, so that's the there are obviously Spanish players in the Premier League, but obviously not many as there are. And so I didn't know as many. Like, I knew Diego Costa, obviously. I know De Gea, the goaltender, is like the best goaltender. I know a bunch of the players, but I would know more in Brazil for sure.
Yeah, one more I'd throw out there. Belgium would be number three. So right now the top odds to win the World Cup are Brazil, Spain, Belgium, England, France.
So it's great. It's so great. I love what they did with it. And Brian, I'm not sure if you noticed, I'm already going to digress, but I was traveling a lot this week. And when I fly, I like to have a Wall Street Journal and read it because it makes me feel smart. And one of the articles in the Wall Street Journal on Wednesday it was like page three of the B section. You know what I mean? It's not like big news. And that's kind of why I find it so interesting, was an article about Electronic Arts. Did you know that this FIFA World Cup mode has brought in hundreds of millions of dollars to EA, this free mode through Ultimate Team? They have crushed it financially with this Ultimate Team World Cup, which I'm not even touching. And so, you know, Brian, you and I spent many hours discussing, worrying, wondering what was going to happen with World Cup with this game, because we didn't think, or this mode, because we didn't think it was going to exist. We thought they were done. They had just given up. Turns out they did the opposite. They basically, very subtly, they kept the full FIFA game off the EA access, and then they introduced the FIFA World Cup mode, which would make a lot of people buy it, and then the Ultimate Team has turned into a treasure trove of money. Amazing story. Yeah. These guys are smart. These guys
that's
are so
Ultimate
smart.
Team.
They had us fooled the whole time, Brian. They know what they're doing.
Yeah, that's Ultimate Team. I mean, like, so...
Right, but I don't play the Ultimate Team. I'm just playing the World Cup tournament stuff, and it's fantastic.
They don't like you, though. They don't like you. what they like is the... I believe the statistic I just read was 70%. What they like is the 70% of people who buy an EA Sports game and go in and play Ultimate Team, because the majority of those people are also...
I don't believe that, by the way.
That's the number they
put out. I know that's the number. I saw that. And I don't believe
you
it.
Don't
I don't mean
70%?
It's wildly lower. I don't think it's like 10%. I'm just saying 70%. Does that mean 70% clicked on the button Ultimate Team versus 70% played 90 minutes or more? I think the difference between those two metrics are pretty significant. Not that it matters. They're making hundreds of millions of dollars. They're going to make $1 billion. Good for them. I'm just saying, I don't really think 70% of people play Ultimate Team. I think that's too high.
I think Ultimate Team's an easy one for people to try and then abandon. Like you said, they may go in and then, yep, not for me. I'm not going to grind the way I need to, or I'm not going to spend hundreds of dollars to compete the way I need to. But with like the World Cup one, it worked out for them because it reinvigorated what's already a giant user base of people who play Ultimate Team, right? You saw people who maybe were done with Ultimate Team or close to getting done. This is the time of the year where those Ultimate Team modes starts to dry out because seasons are over. Now, of course, World Cup brings a whole new one. So But, like, you know, normally an NFL season's over, an NBA season's over, and so this is the point of the year where they go kind of crazy and start introducing and letting everybody get high-rated cards and stuff. But with this one, they were able to do a whole separate mode for it. And I think what happened was you ended up with Ultimate Team people and people who already own FIFA 18 dove into that. I'm not convinced that it did a great job of growing the FIFA brand like a World Cup standalone game would do, because I don't think it probably motivated a lot of people to go out and buy the game necessarily.
I disagree.
Or those who don't. There was no advertising for it. I mean, how would you even know?
You're right.
But then also, I don't picture people going into Ultimate Team only for World Cup. I think it was probably people who already played the Ultimate Team are like, here's something new, here's something fresh. I don't know if that really, like, it didn't draw me in to play Ultimate Team. Did it draw you in to play Ultimate Team?
We don't do that anyway. We're not who they're talking about. We're old men who play video games like old men. We don't matter. But the point is, my point is that it's good because I'm able to play this the way that I want to, and Ultimate Team is clearly doing its thing. It's just, to me, a really amazing coup by EA doing this, because it's different than they've ever done it. The World Cup only comes along every 4 years. And, man, again, like, these guys are just cunning and smart. And the thing that makes me happy is that me, as somebody who did not and will not touch a minute of World Cup Ultimate Team, I am having a blast playing the World Cup modes, right? They could have just put an Ultimate Team mode. In fact, Brian, you and I both suggested that was a significant possibility when we were trying to figure out what it was going to do. It's like, well, they'll probably wind up just putting out like some Ultimate Team modes. What they did was do that with a great legitimate World Cup mode tacked onto it, which, as I mentioned earlier, you can also take some other teams that didn't make it and put them in, like Italy and the United States. Pete, have you touched World Cup? I've been yapping about it for weeks now and been getting on your case to do it. Have you touched the FIFA World Cup mode?
Yeah, I have. I played through. I got knocked out in the knockout round as England. I've been having fun with it. It is also, I wanted to chime in before, but I didn't want to interrupt. It is worth pointing out that this past week in the UK, FIFA's the number two selling game. It's really the only place we get weekly sales charts outside of Japan.
Wow. I didn't know that.
But it's number two on the list.
I was just going to say that's, I would imagine that would be the case in countries where they're actually participating in the World Cup. Not so much here. Yeah,
for sure. I'll be shocked if it charts like when the MPD top 10 comes out. Though weird. I mean, 2K charts like year round a lot of the time. It's pretty interesting. But yeah, so I am having fun with the mode. I also reinstalled Pro Evolution and was disappointed that there's like nothing really there for that. I was going to go online and figure out what to do with like a USB stick. I'm sure somebody sort of created it in some way, shape, or form. But just reinstalling it made me realize how, like, once again, and this happens every time I play it, how much more I enjoy playing that game than I do FIFA. I like FIFA. I have a good time with FIFA, but Pro Evolution is just so good.
I played it today.
So good.
I played it today. It's wonderful.
And it's all of this licensing stuff is such a bummer to me, because when I was like 25 or even 30, I would be the guy with the USB thing, and I would have done all that stuff. But like, I don't really want to do that at this point in my life. So like, I think to myself, maybe I'll do it, and then I don't, and then eventually I just stop playing the game. So it's like, Pro Evolution has the gameplay in spades, but doesn't have the leagues I want, doesn't have all the players that I want, etc. FIFA has all of that stuff, but then I play the game and I'm not having as much fun as Pro Evolution. It's a bummer. I wish that I could get both.
So the other thing that I've been doing in FIFA is, after I lost on penalty kicks to Spain, I then still wanted to play some more FIFA and went back to my Everton club that I had started in FIFA. So now I have an Everton. I'm in near the end of the second year in Pro Evo, and I'm about 10 games into the first year on FIFA. And I'm looking to upgrade, not to get super technical here, but I'm looking to upgrade my striker position, because if you remember, for years, Romelu Lukaku was the striker. He was the best guy on the team. Whenever I played FIFA or Pro Evolution, he would lead the league in goals, and, you know, with 25 or 30 or 35, ungodly numbers for anybody other than, you know, the top seasons ever in Premier League history. So he's long gone to Manchester United, because that's what happens to Everton players. The good ones go to the clubs that make the Champions League. And so I've got a couple of replacements, the real guys like Tosun and stuff. But these guys are not that good. So I was on the market, and I sent out my scouts, and I found a striker. And during the window, I went to go offer him, or went to go try to get him. And it goes to a cutscene where the manager or whatever, I don't know what they're called all the time, of the club. This was a club in Italy. I had had my guy find a young striker, like 24, 25, and who was rated like an 84 overall. So like, this is the kind of guy you want to get, because he can probably get to an 85 or 86, and he's young, and the price range was right. It was like between 45 and 65 million was the transfer fee, and I had a budget of like 94 million. And I, you know, I'm not doing this for 5 years, like, I'm doing this for a year, maybe two. So, you know, I can afford to overspend on a guy who might become a very important goal scorer for me. So, it goes to a cutscene where this guy walks in the room, and there's this little Mass Effect like conversation tree where with how you want to interact. And basically, what I said was, all right, look, I want to make you an offer. And I made the initial offer at 40 million. And I think his market range was like 44 to 60. And this is starting off. I said, I'll give you 40 million for him. And the guy freaked out, called me like a jerk, and said, I'll never talk to me, and walked right out of the room. I'm like, what? And now I can't even talk to the guys or get this guy. I mean, lesson learned. Start at the bottom, but not below the bottom. I didn't know that. So now I can't get this guy, and I'm ticked off. So I hadn't experienced that before. It was an interesting moment. And I'm not exactly adept at this kind of stuff. It was all I could do just to get to the point where I could find the guy who would make that offer to. Because I only know like 15 real-world soccer players. I love Premier League soccer and international football, but I don't know that many players. So it's not like I'm like, all right, I need a striker. Well, you know, from my years of watching the French and the Italian leagues, I know that the guy from Ajax is the one, you know, like, I don't know any of these guys. So anyway, that was an interesting moment, I thought, in playing FIFA.
So is that all, everything you wanted to get to, Rich?
Well, I just want to mention real quick, I continue to play the show. I didn't restart my Mets season. It's now early August. The Mets are a game out of the wild card spot. And I just keep playing it whenever I can on the treadmill. I've been traveling a ton, but whenever I get on the treadmill at home, which is only a couple days a week now because I usually work out at work, I get in two games of MLB The Show and then one of Pro Evolution. So I just continue to play those two games, MLB The Show. What's going to be interesting, Brian, is I'm going to do my best to make it as the wild card as the Mets, and then having to play that one game wild card, assuming I'm already putting the cart before the horse that I'll get there because I am a game out. So I'm, mm-hmm. You know, there's the two teams and I'm one game back. But boy, that's, you know, what should I do there? Should I play the whole nine innings? And because I haven't played a single full game, I always do two or three at bats on player lock and then play the sixth.
You won't score, Rich.
I know.
So right. I'd say let the CPU take it for the same way you've been doing.
All right.
So, roll the dice.
Yeah. You're probably right. That's probably right. And I should probably play it on the treadmill, too. I mean, you know, although mm-hmm. I do play a few of the baseball games at night right before I go to bed because it's just so good. You know, again, I know there's a lot of controversy around the show. I do still really like it. I do still really like it. And I saw today, I turned it on. Evidently, there's a whole bunch of new individual player-based quests to go on or something.
Yeah, if you want to.
I don't even know what that is. I know that Mills was all over it. Mills Gaming TV, I saw him on Twitter, was really into this. Pete, I don't know, do you play any of this stuff, the Diamond Dynasty stuff on the show?
No, you know, I haven't this year. I got really into it last year, and for about 3 or 4 months, and it was the first time one of those modes had grabbed me that much. And then when I burnt out, it was just like, I'm done with that mode forever, is what it felt like.
So that's what That's what I have been playing, sir. So thank you for indulging me in some pretty esoteric sports video game stuff.
Pete, you want to run through a few things that you've been spending time on lately?
Yeah. Surprisingly to me, because of the outrage that I felt when a couple members of this show from Polygon selected Super Mega Baseball 1 as their sports game of the year in whatever year that was.
2014, I believe.
Super Mega Baseball 2 is easily the best sports game I've played in a couple of years now.
So, and you go right to that point. You don't even go most of the way. You do exactly what you killed them for, which is, nope, it's better than everything. Number one, top right. of the list.
Yeah, exactly. Like, what they should have said is it's really quite good, which is true. And that's what I should be saying right now as well. It's really a quite good game. But also, I mean, part of my problem is, and this was going to be my second topic, is I'm not as in love with sports games this year as I have been in the past. Mm. And so I think part of that is that we've hit this sort of plateau where the games have been really similar to each other year to year, almost two generations straight now. You know, like there hasn't been a big jump since the PS2 and PS3 or, you know, Xbox 360.
I can't imagine there will be ever again. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I just can't see where it would go.
Yeah, no, there may not be. And that's fine. Like, and I think that people like me will, you know, there's ebbs and flows to this thing. You get sick of it for a couple of years, but then, you know, like, I haven't played much Madden at all, which actually has me really excited about the next Madden, because maybe having a year where I really only played it for a month, which is crazy to me. I mean, like, prior years, especially with the online league we have, I was playing it year round. So maybe having 11 months off will reinvigorate it for me. Yeah, so going back to Super Mega Baseball 2, mm-hmm. it's I'm not even sure what's improved over the original one because of the fact that it was 2014, and I only played it a bit. Everything feels a bit crisper. I can tell, like, I can definitely tell that the fielding doesn't feel nearly as sluggish as it did. It's just, it's a really, really good time. It makes me wish, though, that, like, when Super Mega Baseball came out, my friends list had, like, 30 people who played it. So there was just constantly, like, leaderboard jockeying to do against each other. And now with Super Mega Baseball 2, being a Games with Gold game, of the month, you would think there'd be a ton, but there's, like, 3 people on my friends list who've played it. And so, I'm not getting as much enjoyment. Like, whenever I sign on and I see someone has, like, the single game record for star points, I get excited because it just gives me something to work towards. Because I don't find the season mode all that fun. I haven't really messed around with the online mode, the competitive online mode. It doesn't seem like something I want to do. Like, I'm not sure what exactly this game can do to hook me in, because, like, a franchise mode wouldn't necessarily work all that well either. So it's like, it's a game that I love to play. I'm just looking for reasons to play it. And I'm not sure what those reasons are. And I don't think they've figured that out yet. Like, there's definitely room for them to grow in terms of game modes and getting people hooked to it. But in terms of, like, leaderboard jockeying, to me, is where that game shines. Like, the star point system is amazing. I would love that to be in every sports game, even, like, just an optional thing you can turn on, you know, like, just to have that sort of that level of competition, but while playing a single-player game. So I'm having a really good time. Really good time with that, surprisingly. Best sports game ever in the history of anything. No, no hyperbole.
Nope.
At all.
There it is.
But yeah, so, like, that also, like, and
by the way, I love Super Mega Baseball 2. We just had Scott Drader on a couple weeks ago, so
yeah, it's fantastic. They've really hit, like, gameplay wise, they've really nailed so many things. But the next thing I want to talk about is why am I, and I don't really know the answers to this. I wanted to bounce it off you guys. I am more into the NBA now than I ever have been in my life. And this past year, even with two games that I considered good, I've played the least amount of NBA sports games that I probably have in 10 or 15 years. And I'm not entirely sure why that is. Like, when I play NBA 2K, I don't think to myself, like, well, this and this bugs me, and that's why I don't want to play anymore. I'm just not enjoying it as much, and I'm not sure why.
I'll give you a theory. When you have a good team in real life, you don't need to escape to the video game. So you got to enjoy the real thing with the Celtics and exceeding expectations and all of that. But if your team is in the dumps and awful, you can go in there and you can, you know, just by yourself being good at the game, make them better, or you can go into franchise mode and rebuild the team and go through multiple years of stuff that you can't do in your real life. You can't fast forward 5 years in your real life and have a that new fresh team on your hands. So that's one theory. The other theory would be NBA games are complicated to play. Like, I don't know if that's, I don't see, and that comes from someone, you know, who plays the games regularly. I don't know if it's as it's definitely not as complicated to play to pick up and play a FIFA game. Or even Madden, if you have knowledge of football. Basketball, though, because there's so many moving pieces and the control schemes, especially in NBA 2K, are so complicated. I think it's difficult to, you can go in FIFA, you can go in Madden, and you can make your team better by playing with them. I think very often when I'm playing NBA 2K, at least on a difficulty level that provides some challenge, I probably make the team worse because I don't know how to, you know, efficiently run plays, or I don't have the patience to do it all the time. The things that you need to be successful in an NBA game, I think, are a little more, they're just tougher to come by, and you need to have a deeper skill set and a deeper familiarity with the systems that are in play there. I don't know if you're applying that, you know, that thought of yours to all sports, or if it was just NBA specific, but those are my thoughts on all that.
Yeah, no, and that's good, and I think that's a big part of it. And then taking that same idea, like how the real life Celtics are messing me up in video games as the Celtics, I think also my obsession with this team, to the point where, like, I watch every summer league game, every preseason game, every regular season game. Preseason games, I've watched the Celtics against Charlotte like five times now, just because it's like the only footage of Gordon Hayward like wearing a Celtics uniform and all the starters out there for like a good chunk of the game. So like I'm obsessive with this team, and when the game doesn't do exactly what I see on a day-to-day basis, it also bothers me. Like, just finishing around the rim with Kyrie in the game is like not easy. And he makes ridiculous layups and has just crazy spins and whatnot. And they're not, you know, like, some of it's in the game, some of it's not in the game. And this isn't the game's fault. I'm not sitting here saying, like, 2K is garbage for not having this. Like, we're getting to a level of detail that's ridiculous, you know, like, and 2K actually gets into more detail, as you just said, about, like, how complex these games are, because they try to fit in every, like, little detail like this. But then there's people like me that are just like, well, yeah, but it's not enough. Like, why can't I spin it, like, you know, 5 feet outside the box, like, and in with Kyrie? Or, like, why am I missing this layup or that layup? And I think another part of that is, like, I think they have been catering the game more and more to competitive play, just between, like, the esports angle and, like, and all of the modes that that are competitive online and where people spend money, that they're sort of getting rid of the cheese. One of the reasons why I enjoy NBA Live this year is because of the fact that, like, you can make ridiculous layups. Like, in NBA 2K, if you take an awful shot, it's not going in. It's just not ever going in if you take a really, really horrible shot. In NBA Live, it might. And I, like, to me, that feels slightly more realistic, and it's also more fun.
I agree. I mean, you want to see, like you said, you want to see what happens in real games. And so why should I, if you know, or maybe it should be, if I am controlling, you know, Steph Curry, Why should I make Steph Curry terrible because I'm terrible? Shouldn't Steph Curry just do magical things because I hit a button? You know, that's basically what we're getting at. And some of my favorite basketball games over the years, even going back to like NBA Live 2003, were not super simulations. They were ridiculous games where I would control Jamal Crawford and make like 25 threes in a game. And I didn't care. It was just fun. Had some great battles online, Jamal Crawford versus Jamal Crawford with a buddy of mine, because Crawford grew up around here. So it's like, you know, I see what you're getting at. And I think there's a there's room for both of those types of games. And yeah, 2K definitely trends towards the competitive and the skill-based side of things.
Yeah, for sure. And NBA Live, even though there's a lot of things about the gameplay that I like at all, they get all of the details totally wrong. Like NBA 2K is amazing in terms of like the rotations, just players in and out throughout the game mirror almost exactly what Brad Stevens does, to the point where like it's genius to me. And NBA Live doesn't get that stuff at all. NBA Live's like Daniel Tice isn't even on the roster. Like it had, like there's been like 57 roster updates and they just keep not adding him. And there was actually like three or four players at the beginning of the season that weren't on the roster. So there's just a lot of stuff like that. Again, if you're at my level of obsession, it messes with you. It's like, okay, well, I can't play a franchise mode in here if these players aren't here. And then like, I also know, like, it's like, well, use create a player. I'm a homer. Like Daniel Tice to me is like a 94 overall, even though he's like a backup and he plays like 12 minutes a game. He's a 94. He's the best German player ever, better than Dirk Nowitzki. So like, I can't trust myself to create a player either. It's just, it's problematic.
All right. So couple quick comments on that. So first of all, mm-hmm. Brian, you mentioned something that you said, as your team is good, perhaps you don't need the game. I will not disagree with you, because there's definitely something to that. But I will also say that this year, as the New Jersey Devils had a really wonderful year, that was their first year in four where they eventually made the playoffs, and they also wound up having the MVP in Taylor Hall. I played much more NHL than I had in years past. So mm-hmm. it can go in the other direction as too, the other direction okay. too, although in that direction I had almost been a lapsed NHL player. So it's not the same as someone who would have played it.
You though, Rich, are very weird in that you don't just play with your team. You're an Eagles fan who had the Cowboys in an online franchise.
It's
so
awful.
I don't want to take anything you do as the norm here.
Once. Let's be clear. Of the 27 online franchise opportunities I've had, 26, I had my favorite team. Once, after years of frustration, I said, I need an offensive line because I want to be able to run the ball, because I think great offensive lines are important. Uh-huh. So 26 out of 27. But yeah, fine. That's fine. And I love how you bring this up with Pete here too, who just, this is a whole thing going on now. So anyway, so yes, I'm weird, but I admit that. Everybody who listens to this show and has for years, and thank you, knows me for that. And that's probably one of the reasons, well, not probably one of the reasons they're listening, but they know that. They definitely know that. But the other thing I was going to say, talking about the controls in NBA 2K, I always play NBA 2K. It's consistently my favorite game for many years, is my favorite game, and it's always a game I like. The last couple of years has not been my favorite, but I still played it a bunch. I don't know how many games I played this past year. I definitely played 120, because I played almost two seasons of the Washington Wizards, and I didn't try one alley-oop. Mm-hmm. Not one. You would think at some point when you're playing 120 games, you would say to yourself, you know what? I'm going to do an alley-oop. But no, I'm too scared to do an alley-oop in NBA 2K.
You throw it into the crowd.
It's just it's a bridge too far. I'm not going to even try it. I know I know what I can do. I know how to hold that left trigger, call for a pick and roll, try to get a screen. I generally speaking know at a certain point in time how to call for an isolation or call for everybody to just run from one spot to the other. But other than that, I don't go for it. There's no reason why I shouldn't. Why don't I try a single alley-oop, Pete Dodd, in 130 games? What is wrong with me? Why don't I do that?
You know what? I would have guessed personally if someone said to me, like, you know, bet on the amount of alley-oops that Rich Grisham's thrown in I would have guessed zero. Like, that's just, it fits your personality. It's not, this is the least shocking news you've given about this game.
That's good. Yeah, you don't have the flash, Rich.
Definitely not.
Your name is Rich Milktoast Grisham, right?
Lay up Grisham, yeah. Very delicate way to say it.
Breakaway, a finger roll Grisham.
Just least path of resistance.
Yeah. Did you have more you want to get in on?
Oh, that's good. Pete, go for before it. Man. We... Keep it okay, rolling.
Pete.
Yep. No, I'm good.
I want to, we want to hear you talk about the Crew 2. Everything you got.
Yeah, which, by the way, as you're hearing this, Pete's written review of the Crew 2 is at the top of hitthepass.com.
Yep.
Yes. And thank you for that opportunity. It's been a long while since I've written a review of anything, and that was a lot of fun to do. So the Crew 2 is one of my most anticipated games of the year, which sounds ridiculous and kind of is. But I'm a fan of racing games in general, but especially like arcade racing games quite a bit. And this year has had a pattern, and I feel like the Crew 2 fits into it in terms of it's good enough, but it doesn't go beyond that. You know, I felt the same way about Gravel. I felt the same way about the newest MX versus ATV. And I feel that way about the Crew 2. It's improved off the base game, off the first game, quite a bit. The first game did a lot of things right, but the thing that it didn't do right at all was the racing. And in a racing game, that's a pretty big deal. It had this amazing open world. It had a ton of events. It had like an event editor, so you can create your own. It had player versus player. It had like an upgrade system that basically made it like a car PG, I believe is what people are calling it. I don't love that term, but it is like properly descriptive. If you could get past the sort of slippery driving in that game, there was a lot of fun to have. They released two or three major expansions for it, and the driving model got better. So at the end, that game was fantastic. And in a lot of ways, this game right off the bat is even better driving wise than that game ended. They've nailed that. Like the racing, the sense of speed is fantastic. The cars feel different enough that like that there's a point in having a bunch of different cars, where that was actually one of the complaints early on about the other game too, is that they all felt very samey. And there's a lot more disciplines is what they call it. Like there's like drag racing and it also like dirt bikes, and also goes as far as like motorboats and airplane stuff, and everything that they put in the game is good enough. Like there's no one discipline where it's just like, oh, this is awful, why did they put it here? Some are better than others. There's a handful that approach, like I think certain people will just be like, I hate the stunt airplane thing. It drives me nuts. Like that wouldn't surprise me if people feel that way. But in general, I feel like they did well there. One of the issues I have with it, though, is that while they have all of this breadth in terms of different modes to play, each mode has at most 12 tracks, which is a huge problem. And there, like I said a second ago, there was a track editor in the first game. It's not there in the second game. So, like, if you're into street racing, like, have fun on your 12 tracks. And the fact, like, the map is enormous. It's the United States, like a truncated version of the United States. It takes like a good like 35 minutes to drive from coast to coast, probably an hour and a half to 2 hours to like sort of circle the entire country. It's quite massive. It has a ton of points of interest. It has, you know, like everywhere you'd want to see, from the Grand Canyon to like downtown Manhattan, Miami, you know, Rocky Mountains, like every big thing that you can think of is there. But threw out all of those things, if you're into street racing, you only have 12 races. And that, like, it irks me on such a major level, especially since these races aren't complicated. It's not like they reform the whole place and wall off sections or anything like that. It's just checkpoints that you drop. And in the first game, it was as easy as like driving around and hitting one button to drop a checkpoint and then driving to a new place and be like, this checkpoint will be here. So it's not something that seems like it would take a lot of effort. I'm not going to say that they're being lazy or any of those things. But it's just something that I will say makes me scratch my head. And that's, like, that feeling becomes problematic once you've finished the game. Because if you approach the game as a CarPG, once you hit the end game, there's no point to it. And a major reason for that is because there are no player versus player competitive races in the game currently. They have been there. There's a roadmap for the year where they're giving out a ton of free content, which is awesome. And they're coming in December, which in the review I said, and like, and it might be a bit hyperbolic, but I stand by it. If you release a competitive game, or, you know, you release a racing game in 2018 without player versus player races, it's an early access title. That's not like there. That doesn't happen. Like, even if you get these budget games, like the MXGP series and stuff like that, like, they all have, like, online racing. Like, games, like, all console games since, like, 2002 have online, like, competitive racing, and it's insane to me that it's not there. And it also makes the like, all the role-playing game aspects of the game pointless, because once, like, it took me 15 hours to get through the entire game, to beat all the events, but I still have a long way to go. Like, my cars are like level like 250 and they can get up, I think, to like 340, somewhere in that range. So, you know, grinding races over and over again would get me to parts to do that. But why would I do that if I've already beaten all the races? There's, like, as far as I can tell, unless I'm missing something completely, and I don't think I am, there's zero reason to do that. Like, so the entire end game, quote unquote, of this as a role-playing game is like null and void until there's PvP. When there's PvP, you want to have the fastest car with like all of the best parts and all the best perks with the parts, because you can get perks in terms of, like, you know, a little bit more like nitrous or like a little bit better cornering or whatever. And so it will be worth going through that and upgrading the cars to do that. But until then, it's just utterly unnecessary. And it's just, it's a bummer. So, like, you know, PvP was a big part of the first game, and especially the end game. It's not there. Track editor was a big part of the first game, and it's not there. There was like cops and like chases and stuff like that was added into the first game. It wasn't there at launch, but it was added to it. That's not there. So in a lot of ways, like, and I mentioned this a bit in the review, as a Destiny fan, this is Destiny 2 all over again, where the core of the game, the core gameplay that they brought forward from the prior game is fantastic. But so many of the things that they learned making the first game, they just like seemingly forgot going into this game. And it's a bummer. So if you're the type of person that's just like, I want an arcade racer, just like, you know, to mess around with, to have fun with, give me my 10, 15 hours of fun, totally recommend it. Totally recommend it. If you're looking at it as like, this is something that I want to do and I want to work on, like, this is a game that I'll keep coming back to for like the next year or two of my life, it's not that right now. Even though I think they want to be that, I think they're working towards that, but it's not going to be that until a bunch of updates happen to it.
This is a Ubisoft game, right?
It is.
I play and enjoy a lot of Ubisoft games, like we talked about on the podcast. I'm playing The Division right now, which is an Ubisoft game. I played a ton of Far Cry the last couple, two or three, the last two for sure, a significant amount. Love it. I have been anti-Assassin's Creed for years. Love Assassin's Creed Origins. Fantastic game, the ancient Ninja game. So I'm on the Ubisoft train these days, especially right now. What's the Ubisoft hook in here that is common across the rest of their games? I can't describe properly what it is, but they all have this sort of way of just kind of keeping you in and saying, all right, I got this thing, now I need to get this other thing, or I got to level my guy up from 4 to 5, and once I do that, then I'm good. And
right.
And then, oh, wait a second, I just got a mod for my weapon here, so let me just put that on there. Oh, that made that go up by a level. That's cool. All right, so, oh, I just got a new little thing that popped up over here that's going to let me take my base and increase it from 20 to 30%. Like, there's always these little tiny things that are popping up that don't seem significantly difficult to do if you're looking in the right direction. Is that what's going on in the crew? Is that sort of what pulls you along?
Yes. Yeah. That's the CARPG. I'm making air quotes here and you can't see me because we're not on video. That's the CARPG part of the game. And it's very much a Ubisoft game in terms of, like, there's a giant map with like 1,000 icons on it and it's all just different races everywhere. So there's, you're never run out of stuff to do.
So I'm not trying to cut you off, but like, and I love the Forza Horizon, but the map had too many icons. It feels in The Division, for example, and I'm playing it now because it got given out at E3 and I decided to hop in and play it. It's not a game I would ever play, and I'm playing it and I'm actually having a lot of fun with it. But the map is not littered with stuff everywhere. There's enough, but it's not constant. And in Forza Horizon, there was a billion things and it was too much. And so is that another thing going on in the crew? Because that's what's happening to me in The Division, for example.
Yeah. I think in general that Ubisoft's gotten better at that. I think that they, like, if, you know, enough gamers, like, complained about that. Like, the maps were littered with things to do. And it felt like the design choice was just, like, give them a ton of stuff to do instead of, like, give them a ton of fun stuff to do. Like, it just felt like a bunch of checklists instead of, like, a bunch of fun things. And this game veers a little bit into that, but for the most part, it's fine. And everything that you were just talking about, like, being, like, in a normal Ubisoft game is totally great until you reach the end. So, like, the entire time, like, you're racing, you finish a race, you know, three different car parts, like, drop onto the ground, you drive over them to pick them up, you go into the menu, and, you know, you upgrade, like, your exhaust from, like, this, like, level 52 to, like, level 57.
I love that.
This perk, like, yeah, and you see, like, your overall top speed goes from 159 to 161.
Yes.
You're like, all right, yeah, and it has this perk, too, that it's, like, you're going to get, you know, like, you'll... When slipstreaming, you gain 2% more speed. So it has all of that, and it's great. And all of that stuff, like, I was totally hooked. I mean, that's why I've played the 15 hours, like, in 2 days. I was just, like, crazy, crazy into it. The problem is that the expectation for people like me and people who played the first game was that you do that, and then you finish, you know, the story in the first game, and then this just sort of, like, all of the events, and then you keep going. Like, your cars aren't maxed out, so you keep building up. You want to get to the top power level. You want to get all the best perks, and that chase is a lot of fun for a lot of people. And there's just no point to it. Like, there, so it's great fun when there is a point, when the point is to beat all of the events. But if you're looking for an end game, It's pointless as of now.
So this being an Ubisoft game, they will clearly add to it. And I think I read in your review on hitthepass.com that their first promise update is in December. So that's a long time away.
The first update is in September.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Gator Rush is coming out. It's going to have a new discipline, which is, I don't know the name of them, but those boats that they drive around the gators with the big fan things on the back. So it's going to add those to the game. We don't know if it's going to add tracks or not for the rest of the stuff, but it's also going to increase the power levels of the car. So it'll just give you new stuff to grind after. And there's also, like, the loot has different rarities too. And the more rare it is, the more perks it has on it, and they're going to introduce a new one that's going to have, I think, three perks on it. I think the most, no, the most you can get now is 3, so it's going to have 4 perks on it. So it's going to up the cap for people like me who want to just keep playing and sort of min-max all of their cars.
Very cool.
Yeah. I like the game a lot. I do think it's a good game. I think for most people too, they're just going to want to play until they finish all of the events. And there, you know, there's like this main event at the end. There's a thing to work towards. And if that's what you're looking for, like I give the game 2 thumbs up.
But
go for it.
It's just interesting how Ubisoft does it now. And I'm not saying this in a negative way, because I've just been talking about how I play a lot of their big games. I mean, I play Far Cry. I'm now back to Assassin's Creed because Origins was so good, and the new one in Greece, I'm sure I'm going to play. I'm playing The Division right now. They release these games now when they're like, okay, that's not true. Because Assassin's Creed Origin at release was astounding, because I played it not on day one, but I played it like probably 3 to 6 weeks after release. So that's not fair. But anyway, they're releasing the game knowing that it's going to be a live service for 3 years. Like, that's what they do now. So it's like, we don't need to release the same game that we would have had to 5 years ago, because we can release enough now so that people can play a good game now. And then in 2 months, we'll do something. And then in 3 months, we'll do something. And then in 6 months, we'll do something. Because, like, Pete, I guarantee you the Division game that I'm playing right now is not anywhere close to what it was when it launched, whenever it came out.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, I played the Division from launch, and it was a mess, especially once you reach the end game. It was a mess, and it made no sense. And the Division right now is one of the best, like, in that genre.
And I don't even mean
they've done crazy work on it.
And I don't even mean whatever game you're talking about. I mean just playing it from the beginning. I guarantee you what I'm playing in the first 2.5 hours of the game that I played is significantly upgraded from what it was originally. So it's just, like, it's interesting that this is the way that games are now, and it's good in a way.
Yeah.
If it wasn't this way, you wouldn't see The Crew 2 for another year and a half or more, maybe, right?
Right, right. I wish that there was something, you know, like, I don't think we're going to see console games, especially, like, release in early access, especially big games like this. Like, we'll see things like PUBG's, you know, stuff that's online only, I think we'll see. But it would sit better with me, you know, like, because, like you said, we're getting used to this. And it's not just Ubisoft. Even Nintendo making new, like, not just new games, but has a lot of games, you know. Splatoon 2 has grown quite a bit, and a lot of, there was complaints about Splatoon 2 when it came out that it didn't have enough content, and there's no more complaints anymore.
Let me interrupt you real quick, Pete, and I'm sorry for this, but I also want to be clear, I'm not talking about releasing a broken game, because The Crew 2 is not a broken game. The Crew 2, what you're saying, at is not quite the complete game that you want, but it's not broken. Ubisoft was famous, 2 or 3 years ago for releasing games that were just completely broken. That's not happening anymore either. And that's something that's a good thing as well.
Yeah. Assassin's Creed Unity was broken. Like, there's so many gifs and stuff of just, like, horrific things happening in that game.
All the games are broken. Remember? We forget, but when the Xbox One and the PS4 launched, a significant majority of games that came out, like, major parts of them didn't work. We've gotten over that hump, and now it's a different situation, which is, this is not the same complete set of content we would have released had we done this a few years ago, but that's okay, because this is going to be a 3-year project, and it's very different. And like I said, I kind of like it.
I mean, it's a mixed bag for me, but overall, I like it. I would rather have it this way than the games not change over time, and the with the good and bad. I do think that it's slightly more egregious in this case, just because of the fact that there's no player versus player.
Right. No. No. I get that.
That's a big deal.
Yep.
Like, the rest of my complaints about the game, like, especially like the end game not having much point, like, all of that stuff, like, that doesn't matter, because that's, like, to me, you know, like an Ubisoft game is just a normal game as you're playing through it from like from start to end. And then after it ends is when it turns into a game as a service. Like when it's like you still have the open world, you still have a ton of things to do. And then they keep adding new content in and new changes. And, you know, like and like, you know, Assassin's Creed are like, here's this weird thing where we're actually going to have Final Fantasy 15 characters in a mission randomly. And it's just like, and the game feels like this living world. And looking at The Crew 2, from start to end, it's fantastic. But it's like the second that it ends is where it all falls apart. Like the games as a service part of it right now is problematic. But I do have faith in them just because I saw how they fixed the first one. And I feel the same way about Destiny 2, because like Destiny 2 released in the exact same state where it was just missing so much stuff from the first game, and Bungie has just been adding things. Like every month they have a major patch where they're adding back in things that should have been there from the start, but at least they're there now. And I have a feeling that Ubisoft's going to do the same thing, but it's worth pointing out that it's a bummer that we have to wait for it.
It's a very interesting time of year to launch a game, too. Very interesting.
Yeah, it is. I have a feeling that it probably was slated for earlier. It was probably on their fiscal calendar of last year, so it must have been March or earlier. It got pushed back to now, and it got to the point where they were just like, we need it out there. You know, a lot of companies are afraid of releasing late this year. So many games have been pushed to next year already. And I think that, you know, if PvP is going to be ready in December, that's when the game should have released. But like, it probably would get buried in December. So like, from a financial standpoint, I understand it completely. But I'm not as invested in their financials as I am as, you know, an owner of the game.
So this fall and next spring, the big game this fall is Red Dead, and the big game next spring is what is it? What's the big one next spring?
Crackdown. There's a ton next spring. It felt like everyone sort of moved out of this fall into next spring.
But this fall is Red Dead, and obviously there's a Call of Duty. There's a what else is this fall? But like Red Dead is the big one that everybody moved for. Is that right?
Yeah.
But next spring is, I know it's like February 22nd. There's like three or four major games that come out.
Yeah, there's Anthem, which is the new game from BioWare,
which will get pushed back, and everybody knows it.
Yeah, they're still showing concept art 8 months out, so like that's not going to make it. Right now they're saying it's going to. The Division 2, which the Division 1 was one of Ubisoft's biggest launches ever, so like I know they have a lot riding on that. It's not on that date, but I think it's the next month. I think it's early March. Man, I forget what else. It felt like watching E3. It just felt like everything was moving to then.
There was a Nintendo game in there too, I think so. Well, anyway, Brian. So Pete, thank you for that. That's awesome. Look for Pete's review of The Crew 2 on Hit the Pass as well. Brian, what else we have on our slate tonight?
Yeah, what do you want to get to first, Rich? A little Madden or a little NBA Live?
A little NBA Live. I think that's pizza fan for sure.
All right. Yeah, we did talk a little bit about basketball games earlier. So NBA Live, this was not info that was put out by EA, but it was put out by retailers, and they have were given the information by EA. The most notable piece of news is that there's a brand new commentary team. Now, this is interesting. Not just because it's a new commentary team, but because NBA Live has been really the EA game that has utilized the ESPN license more than any other. ESPN branding, ESPN presentation, ESPN commentary team really had it all tied together. That's not going to be the case anymore. The new commentary team replacing Mike Breen and Jeff Van Gundy. It's going to be Ed Cohen, who's the voice of the New York Knicks, and I'm not familiar with. Maybe Pete is from up in the Northeast. And former player Jay Williams, who, as far as I know, he hasn't done commentary. I know he's an analyst, I believe currently a college basketball analyst. But Ed Cohen, Jay Williams, new commentary team. The key thing to think about with the change, I think it has to relate to the commentary updates they're going to do throughout the season. Very similar to what Madden does. Madden releases weekly commentary updates, and they had to change the commentary team to get two guys who were accessible and had the time to record commentary throughout a season. And I suspect that's what happened here, is that the demands on people like Mike Breen and Jeff Van Gundy, they just, you know, it's just not really feasible for them to come into the studio and record commentary every few weeks. So I think that's what they got, is probably two guys who are able and willing and excited to do that type of thing. Any thoughts on, Pete, on anything NBA Live here new, including that commentary?
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of this change. Like, I think that on a technical level, that it's going to improve the commentary. I think the commentary is going to be more varied, you know, and they're going to be able to update it. You know, I assume it's going to be a lot like the Madden commentary, like that. And on that level, I get why they made the change and whatnot. But I really like the ESPN integration. You know, like, I want to feel like that. You know, like, even the First Take stuff, like when you're doing like the story modes and whatnot, I thought that was really cool. Like, it makes you feel like you're part of the world more. You know, like, I think that, like, I am familiar with that announcer. I get MSG here. Mm-hmm. And he's good, and I think that will make it more comfortable for me or anyone in the New York area. But still, I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't have called that the commentary in the game last year great, but it did feel like you were watching a game on ESPN, and I really like that. I feel the same way about Madden. Like, I was actually very excited about the commentary change. I thought it was going to make the commentary a lot better, because, like, I felt like, going back to the 2K days, like NFL 2K, I felt like had great, much better commentary than Madden, because clearly they were able to get those guys to do more lines and have them, you know, get them in there more than they were. I think it was still somewhere all Madden at that point, if I remember correctly. And it made perfect sense to me. But then when I got the game, I just don't like listening to those guys as much. Like, I want to hear, like, those sort of iconic voices. And, like, even if it means slightly worse commentary, because, and a big thing also is, like, how much do we really pay attention to the commentary, and how much is it just background noise that sounds familiar? And I want it to sound familiar with the ESPN guys, I guess.
Rich, you're not a commentary guy.
I'm not a commentary guy. I find it really interesting that they're investing. This is a lot of work to put into commentary and to get it to match up. I mean, it's one of the very little spoken about things, but the technical prowess that you have to be able to take all of this language and all of these different parts of sentences and player names and scores and times and situations and put them all together is really difficult. You know, in the NHL news, it was sort of mentioned that the NHL commentary continues to be Emmerich and Olczyk, which completely makes sense, because to do new commentary takes so much effort. That's why, to me, this is shocking that they have new commentary. It's because it's so much time and effort. Wow, what a spot to decide to spend that kind of time and effort, especially with a game that we all know really could use. And I don't mean this in a negative way, but there's no area of NBA Live where you could point to and say they're finished there. So that's the thing that surprises me as an end user, as a consumer. I don't care about commentary. I never listen to it. I'm listening to podcasts or music while I'm playing. So, but I know that a lot of people do care about it. And obviously, you know, if you're making these games, it's a big deal. So that's what surprised me. Because I've had interviews, we've spoken with commentary people. It's been a long time, but years ago we had a couple of different podcasts with the Madden guys about it. Probably, what, Brian, three commentary teams ago, where we went into the details on that stuff. So it's such an amazing technical effort. I'm blown away that that's one of the things they elected to do. But hey, good for them. Clearly they knew why they wanted to do it, and they invested the time to do it. So very interesting.
Yeah, I don't know that NBA Live is concerned that much about authenticity. They're definitely making a push towards further, you know, focusing on non-NBA aspects. We saw that with their first trailer. So, I mean, I don't know if they're concerned about that. Instead, they got two people who they think will add more to the audio than subtract from the ESPN authenticity. And if you want, they don't have the TNT license on the NBA 2K side, but they essentially recreated the TNT pregame and the TNT commentary teams that they have multiple commentators, multiple sideline analysts that rotate through. So they've got that down. So I'm not sure EA is really focusing too much on that at this point, and that's probably not a terrible idea to put their resources elsewhere.
Agreed.
Madden, we got the first ratings for Madden, Rich. Madden ratings always vary. I don't know. It's not that exciting to me anymore, but it's always highly debated. I mean, the first thing when Madden ratings came out last week, preliminary ratings that have since changed, the first thing I saw was debate on ESPN and Fox Sports about the ratings the very next morning. And certainly there was debate about it on huge websites like Bleacher Report and ESPN and all that. So, I mean, it's still monitored by a lot of people, and it's still something a lot of people are passionate about. So we know now there are 799 rated players, which is more than usual. It's a lot more than usual, actually. Last year there were 3. So up to 7's a pretty big deal. They moved, of course, the Patriots, of course. They've got 2, Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski. There's Aaron Rodgers, Aaron Donald, Von Miller, Antonio Brown, and Luke Kuechly. And really, Kuechly's the only one that's kind of a surprise. He ended last season at 97. So they bumped him up 2 points. I'm not sure for what, but he got bumped up 2 points in overall and 2 points in a bunch of different individual categories. And I don't think anybody else moved up more than a point. And so a few players dropped out from 99 and are down a little lower. The J.J. Watts of the world, probably due to injury. But then we'll get more ratings in July. Any quick thoughts, Pete, on the first Madden ratings here?
Not really. I do find it interesting, though. I'm in the same boat as you were, where I don't get excited about them anymore, and I used to. So I would be going nuts about this information in 2004. And it's interesting now that, like, watching the mainstream do it. Like, what a change. You know, like, we were all just a bunch of nerds on Operation Sports, waiting for, like, you know, like, for people to make their own rosters to compete with it, like, which, like, you did, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm. Way back in the day.
Yeah, like, and, like, you know, the Pasta Padre rosters were a big deal. And, like, and so obsessed with it, and like now I don't care at all, but it's on Bleacher Report and ESPN. Like, it's nuts.
Yeah, social media and debate shows on TV and needing to fill radio time. I mean, yeah, this is, you're right, it's become far more mainstream, and I think that's why to us it's probably not as compelling. Rich, did you have any thoughts?
I'm outraged, Brian. How is Carson Wentz only an 85? Come on. He would have been the MVP. He should have been the MVP.
How many games has he played, Rich?
13 games last year.
In his career?
Last year, he played 13 games. He was by far the best player in the NFL. He was the de facto MVP. How do you not give him the MVP because he didn't play two or 3 games? That's insane, especially when the last game didn't count. Outrageous,
You want a counter argument, Rich? Mm-hmm. How does Nick Foles step in and is almost as good? So is it a system thing or is it a personal skills thing? I think Wentz is really good.
Wentz
but you could
is
also make the,
great.
Yeah, you can also make the argument that, whoa, where did Foles come from? He stepped in and he won Super Bowl MVP.
That has nothing to do with the fact that everybody, when he scored that touchdown against the Rams in week 13 to put the Eagles ahead, right? If that was the end of the season, he was the MVP. And again, we're talking game 13 in a game If you remember that game, that was the Eagles, the Rams. They were the top two teams in the NFC. The Eagles went to Los Angeles and beat them. That's what sealed the number one seed for the Eagles, and Carson Wentz led them to victory in that game. There were two games after that, and then one meaningless game. So really, he played all but the two games, and he was great. He threw for thousands of yards. He threw for barely any interceptions. He was the MVP. He was not a game manager. Carson Wentz won games. He made incredible plays with his arm and with his feet. Nick Foles came in, and the team completely changed their offense. And by the way, they barely moved the ball. Not only in the regular season game, they moved the ball up and down the field against the Giants in a game that counted. Remember that game, Pete? And then in the two games after that, they couldn't get out of their own way. They lost at home to the Cowboys and the Raiders and didn't even score a touchdown. And then in the playoff game, the home division game against the Falcons, only scored 15 points and only won the game because Julio Jones slipped and fell, probably would have caught a touchdown pass. Foles was amazing in the NFC Championship game and was amazing in the Super Bowl. But they were completely different offenses, different teams. Carson Wentz should be a 99, period, end of story. I'm outraged.
Outraged. My judgment of Wentz is a little clouded by the one game I saw of him in person. The Seahawks smoked
him. His worst game of the year. And he still threw for at least two touchdowns, if I am correct.
In garbage time, I think it was. That game was
the Seahawks demolished the Eagles that game.
Whipped them. And that's absolutely, I don't know. That was the week before the Rams game, by the way.
That was the week before. The Eagles flew out west, went to Seattle first, and then Los Angeles second. That was right before that Rams game.
That was, and I've talked to, at the time I talked to everybody I knew about it. That was the only game all season long that the Seahawks played like a complete game. And it just so turns out it was against the eventual Super Bowl champs. And I believe the year before, the Seahawks were the only team that beat the two Super Bowl teams, the Patriots and the Falcons, in the regular season. So it's like, it's weird.
Well, it just shows you can do it when you want to do it. They just don't want to do it nearly often enough.
No. I know. All right, let's hit some questions we got in. Pete, you actually had a question you were going to raise here for us, and I think it has to do with monetization.
Yeah, so over the past year, we've seen, or over the past 2 years, we've seen all of these publishers take the ideas that they got from Ultimate Team and try to implement them into all games, particularly shooters, competitive online shooters. But we've seen it in a lot of games. And also in addition to that, loot boxes, which is packs of cards are kind of like loot boxes, but that's not pulled directly from Ultimate Team. Ultimate Team's fans have generally, there's been a bit of I wish that they weren't so greedy kind of talk, but have generally always dealt with it. But in the past year, gamers for other types of games have just sort of freaked out. And the biggest one being Star Wars Battlefront 2, which went from what would have been one of the biggest titles of the year to a disappointment. In game sales and they had to revamp the entire system. And then this E3 was just game after game after game, where the people on stage were and it's not going to have loot boxes and it's not going to have, that's become a talking point. So there was gamer outrage, which is a thing too much, I think, but it worked in this case. And has changed everything for the better in shooters and other sort of competitive online games. So I'm wondering if that's going to happen this coming year with sports games, if this is the year that sports gamers get sick of it. My feeling is that it's most likely to happen with NBA 2K, because I feel like up to this point, complaints about VC have been louder than any complaints I've ever heard about in Madden or FIFA, though there are complaints there as well. And it does feel like every year they push it a little bit further, and and people like, and I think that that's about to burst. If it's going to happen, I feel like it's right there. But they have to push it further. I think if they do the same or less in terms of monetization as they did this year, it will be hard to get all of the, you know, get the gamer outrage machine going. But I do think it's possible. I was wondering what, like, if you guys feel like that is imminent or not.
Nope. Not even close. More people are playing NBA 2K. More people are enjoying NBA 2K. And more people are spending money on NBA 2K. I think, and I don't disagree with anything you're saying, Pete, from a personal perspective, in that that's how you feel, and that's how a number of people feel. But for the number of people that feel that way, there are many, 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 many more who do not. And I think there's a lot of things that you can point to where a particularly knowledgeable small group of people have certain opinions, and the conversations that we have with ourselves are accurate within our demographic, but in the larger scale pay are not. So the reason I say that is not because I spend money in these modes or I have any particular affinity for VC, because I do not, and I play a lot of NBA 2K, and VC has nothing, is not in my modes, thank goodness. A couple of years ago, 3-4 years ago, Pete, it was. Like, I couldn't even play like a regular Be a GM without VC infiltrating it, but that has been pulled back. It's been doubled down in the other modes, but that's because people in the park are, that's what they do. This is, now I'm being very generalistic, but they buy NBA 2K and they play it all year long and they spend $100 or $200 or $500 in it. And they're totally fine with that. Now, some of those people will go heavy into it and then disappear. But there's a lot of other people who do it, who play it every year. And that's why NBA 2K is in the top of the charts every single month. And that's why this year, this past year's NBA 2K has made the most money of any NBA 2K ever. And next year's, I'm telling you, Pete, will make even more money than this year's. So that's Rich, what I think. Yes.
Okay. So I can't entirely disagree with you, but let me just start off by asking you. So you don't think that NBA 2K18 getting the lowest Metacritic it's had in over a decade?
Oh no!
You don't think
zero
that
user impact, zero
user reviews being user reviews being like 1.5 on Metacritic, being one and a half stars,
no impact
on like Xbox when you pull up the game. You don't think they care about any of that? That
no.
People weren't satisfied.
There's absolutely not, because there's a lot more people that are. I'm not dismissing the fact that people are unhappy, but there are a lot more people who are not. That's
what I'm
saying.
So you know what they can do, Rich? You know what they can do is better balance it so that they're still making a crap load of money. They don't have to abandon monetization. I mean, the reason why 2K18 and the 2Ks before it got a rough reception in terms of like VC is because it influences the way they're monetizing the game is it influences the way that they're designing it. So
yes,
do they,
I agree. It was bad. I'm not saying it wasn't bad.
Right. So I'm not saying that they have to take VC out. They're obviously not. Their pre-order bonus has 100,000 VC in it. So they're not like shying away from that. But can they do something very easily to respond like Pete, to respond to complaints where you start your My Career mode and you're not starting at 55 or 60 overall or something, but you're starting at 75.
Of course
they
can.
That's where we can see differences. So Pete, the reason, you know, the differentiating between NBA 2K and the other games is because in Madden and FIFA and Pro Evolution Soccer, what name any other sports game, The monetization aspects are isolated to one single mode. So if you don't go into Ultimate Team, you don't feel like you're being, your wallet's being dug into every time you go on to play the game, to play franchise mode or to play, your story mode or whatever you want to do in those games. But in NBA 2K, with the exception of My League, VC is built into everything in that game. And so I don't know. Like I said, they're not going to get rid of it, but I think they will make adjustments. I think they have to at least show that they're listening to people. And there's very easy ways for them to do that without abandoning the ability to make a bunch of money. And, you know, I think we have to see that happen because people are paying more attention to that than ever before, especially after last year.
Yeah. My guess is that we're actually going to see a better VC system out of them this year. When I was saying, like, you know, like the sort of gamer outrage machine, I was saying, like, that really, I think, will only happen if they make a worse one. If you start at 50 and then it costs even more money to get your player up to 85, like, I think people are going to lose it because they've already seen people lose it and win against other games. And also, I just Googled it real quick.
That's a good point, by the way, Pete. You made a very good point. If they do push even more, there have definitely been situations, and the loot box controversy and sort of the backing down of the industry on that, that's an excellent point you just made.
And I can't find the numbers right now. I remember reading this. I may be making it up, but I'm fairly sure that the streaming numbers for NBA 2K are down this year. And I think that a big reason for that, the thing that I read, at least, said that the big reason for that, and it makes sense to me, is Fortnite.
Mm-hmm.
And Fortnite handles monetization in a way, you know, so like, if say this is, you know, the person that doesn't play, like, I think Fortnite's pulled from everyone. So like, let's take streaming out of it. Like, if you're the type of person that plays a game a year and all of a sudden this year it became two games a year because you're playing Fortnite and you're playing NBA 2K, all of a sudden you're getting this game where the monetization's handled it in a way, like, and the game's free and the monetization doesn't get in the way of it at all. I think that's more likely when you do go back and you get 2K19, you'll start to be like, whoa, why are they doing this? Like, they shouldn't be able to get away with this. When NBA 2K used to be your only game, you probably didn't think about it as much.
Yeah, Fortnite changes a lot of equations for a lot of different people in a lot of different ways. A lot of different ways.
Right.
You definitely, like, when you have been playing Fortnite for free for a year and a half, and that's what all your friends are playing, and then all of a sudden you're like, wait, I got to pay $60. Although, look, if you're paying $60 for any game, you're doing it wrong. I got to pay $47.99 for this game, and then they want more of my money. It definitely, you're right, Pete. This is a very 2018 moment that we're having here. But again, Matt Piscitello was on the show a few weeks ago. Love that guy. And he has been explicitly clear with quantitative proof. Services, free-to-play, loot boxes, Ultimate Team, it's all going up. It's all contributing to a larger pool. You guys saw State of Decay 2, a game that was given away for free to anybody who had Xbox Games Pass, was the number one selling game of last month. That's literally impossible. How did that happen? Nobody cared about State of Decay 2, and it sold 3 million copies. And it's free for me and you and everybody else. Everything is changing so quickly. I think NBA 2K is going to be fine because the NBA is a premium brand and the NBA is incredibly popular and people want to play as LeBron and Steph Curry and Kevin Durant. And I think people understand that they have to pay to get in the door for the NBA. That's the big differentiator here, is that when you are with a licensed brand like the Major League Baseball or the NBA or the NFL, that's the one differentiator. But it's still, again, over a large group of people, over a large group of time, as you change their habits for spending, it's definitely a factor. I think the NBA 2K is going to be fine, though, for the next few years because they're fine now. And enough people are willing to play the game. But again, they can't ratchet it up even more. I think they've ratcheted up to the point where, okay, right, here's where we are. It'll stay around the same or maybe even go down a little bit to make it a little more, you know, inviting to a larger group of people.
Yeah. All right, a couple other things we'll run through quick. Question, any theories on why the cover athletes still haven't been announced for Madden and NBA 2K? We're talking about the the standard editions, because we have the Terrell Owens on the Hall of Fame edition. We got who was on 2K? Now that I'm completely blanking
LeBron,
on 2K,
right? LeBron.
Yeah. Yeah. LeBron. How could I forget that? LeBron on the Legend edition of NBA 2K. Well, we know it's been leaked. Giannis Antetokounmpo is on the standard for NBA 2K. They have not officially put that out yet, though. I don't know why. They may just be waiting to have another news cycle to itself. As for Madden, it's kind of interesting because I thought, yeah, they might wait to again capture another news cycle. Why not? Why not wait and have a whole day of news to yourself again for another cover announcement? It's another opportunity to promote the game and create awareness. My only other theory would be that whoever's on the cover, and I don't think they would choose Baker Mayfield because of his history, but if it was someone like Baker Mayfield who still hasn't signed a contract with the Cleveland Browns, and there's a few other rookies who haven't signed contracts, if it was a rookie like that, it could explain why there was a delay in announcing it. But I don't know if they'd also risk that considering the season. There could be a Joey Bosa situation where someone holds out into the season. So I doubt that's it, but that was just something that came to mind. I'd imagine they're just waiting either to coincide with some other news or to just capture a news cycle by themselves. So
this is easy. Yeah. A dual cover, Nick Foles, Carson Wentz. Boom, done. Everybody wants that.
What are we waiting for?
So
it's easy.
I have a theory for the NBA one, and I think it's brilliant. And I don't think many of my thoughts are brilliant. But if I'm NBA 2K, and especially because of LeBron, I'm waiting till LeBron signs with whatever team that he's going to sign with on the hopes that he's going to sign with someone that isn't Cleveland. Mm. And then the day that that news breaks, that's the day that you really, you know, you show the two covers, you know, so you have the Giannis one and then you have the LeBron one. He's wearing the jersey of his new team. And then you're much more likely, even like in mainstream newspapers and stuff, to have that picture be a part. You know, it's like, you know, like LeBron signs with the Lakers and then like, you know, you're reading it. And then like one of the small pictures in it is him wearing picture. A Lakers uniform on a 2K thing.
Dude,
like,
I think that is brilliant. Everywhere. You're right. You nailed it. That's probably multiple millions of dollars of free advertising.
I have one smart idea a year. I just had it right now and I'm pretty excited.
Oh man. It's going to be a rough another 5 months for you or whatever. No more good ideas coming from Pete Todd for the rest of the year. Another one, theories on NBA Playgrounds 2, which, of course, was delayed. I don't remember. Was that a month ago or over a month ago it was delayed?
It was about to come out. It was two or three days like, from coming out.
Yeah.
I don't get that. This is the mystery. It's one thing if it gets delayed 6 months out, 3 months out, 9 months, 12 months, whatever. But 2 or 3 days, what happened?
So there were a couple theories you could have had. The first would be something like the studio being acquired by a 2K or an EA and then announcing something at E3. So that came and went. So that doesn't seem like that's likely. Another possibility was that it would show up in Xbox Games Pass or Games with Gold or PlayStation Plus games for July, and those details just came out in the last day or two and it's not a part of any of those things. So that was another scenario I had in mind for NBA Playgrounds 2 that is not happening. And the longer this goes on, the more this game seems like it's going to get buried. If it doesn't come out before August, I don't know. Whatever they're doing is probably not going to be worth that delay. They had a great opportunity there. They were going to come out right before the NBA Finals. It was going to be, you know, the NBA draft a few weeks later and the ability to add in rookie players with that. It was a lot of basketball things happening that they could have capitalized on that they've now missed out on. And if they fall into September or something, that game's dead. I mean, I really hope they're not doing that because I have higher hopes for the series than that.
Yeah, that's weird. It's weird and it's disappointing. I bought the first game on two different systems, even though I didn't like it. I wanted to like it so badly, and I want to like the sequel as well. I'm not down on it. Like I probably will be there day one just because I want a good arcade basketball game so badly. But it does it every sort of conspiracy theory that you can come up with as to like why this happened, all of them are negative. Like there's no good reason to do this, so it's a little worrying.
Last question. Wondering what we think about NBA Live and NHL and EA not bringing Frostbite Engine to them here last year or this year. So they've kind of fallen behind as far as Frostbite, which is, it of course drives the visual enhancements that we've seen in FIFA and Madden and other EA games, non-EA sports games. And also the ability to create story modes. So you're not going to see a story mode in NHL. You're not going to see a proper story mode the way that they've done with The Journey and with Long Shot in either NHL or NBA Live. You guys have any thoughts on that?
Pete probably does because he's more aware of these technical things. To me as an end user, if EA didn't shove it in my face that Frostbite was a thing, I wouldn't even know about this, right? And it sort of goes back to the one before was the Ignite engine when they announced that. Like these are things that really don't matter.
Well, they tell you to it matters,
us,
though,
but that's my point. If they didn't tell us, we wouldn't even know. Like if EA hadn't put the Frostbite engine in front of our faces as if we're supposed to understand that that's a thing that does something, nobody would know or care. And it's part of the issue, like the Ignite engine. What was that? That came and went. Did it really matter to anybody? No. Was it a real thing even? I don't know. It never needed to be mentioned in the first place. So if anybody truly is concerned about this, it's a problem that EA brought on themselves. You know, I do know, and I know because Mike Young came on the show and talked about it. Like, hey, they, like you said, Brian, they wouldn't have been able to do Long Shot without the Frostbite engine, whatever that means. But as I played NHL last year, and you heard Cat Bailey, or you read Cat Bailey and Matt Cato, and we're going to have Cat on as soon as we can to talk more about NHL. She says it looks better than any other game this year. It's not on Frostbite. Okay. So to me, this is a non-thing. Like if the game, I'd almost rather have developers working on engines and tools that they know and have worked on for years and years and years and can tweak and optimize. And it sounds like this year's NHL might be better for that. Now, again, if you're looking for a story mode like Long Shot in NHL without Frostbite, it doesn't work. Okay, but to me, if I got a breakthrough year of NHL where they got the players skating and shooting and the puck bouncing around more realistically than ever in ways that I can tell, then to me it's a positive that they're not using Frostbite. I don't know. Pete, you're this is more your thing than my thing.
Yeah, so I understand why they've been moving to Frostbite with games, but one of the things that I had worried about is that Frostbite's never been great, or historically was not great at player models. Like the Battlefield games look amazing, but what looking at the actual soldiers in the games, they didn't look as good as soldiers in other games. Now, obviously, Madden and FIFA overcame that, but I wouldn't say that that's the strong point of the engines. I think that like that those games look best at the sort of at the gameplay cameras. It's not like changing to this engine made the close-ups all that much better. So when it comes to the NBA and NHL, the cameras are closer. So that might be part of it. Like the old engine may just be better suited to that. And that might be part of it. The other thing is the reason why they did this is because if everything's on one engine, then they only have to pay for updating that engine basically once. You know, I mean, they make different tweaks for different developers, but DICE makes that engine, you know, and makes it for everyone. So it's more of a long-term thing. It's not necessarily that, like, year one with this engine, the games are going to be better. It's that, like, that going forward, everyone's working on the same engine. DICE can put more time into that one engine. It's going to help the games long-term. So it's a little surprising to me from there, but it's also super expensive. It's and And if you look at their roster of games, there's two games that make a lot of money, there's two games that don't make a lot of money. And look at the ones that, that went to Frostbite and look at the ones that didn't. And usually if you're trying to figure out why something happened, money's the answer. And that's probably more likely. But I wouldn't be shocked if it's because the engine's not great with player models, even though in story mode, they did a really great job with them, I felt like, in the close-ups.
All right. Well, you know, this was like a Dodcast crossover, as I said at the start of the show. We also adapted the Dodcast runtime. I think we went like an hour and a half there. That's pretty good. That's a super.
That's what we do, man. That's what we do.
Extended episode.
Yep.
Yeah. So it was awesome. It was great having you on, Pete Dodd. Where can we find your stuff other than Hit the Pass, as Rich so greatly promoted earlier?
I am. Twitter's the best place. I am at sign and then the word at.
That's very confusing.
Dodd. Yeah, it was made like it was supposed to be funny because it was confusing, and it was until the first time I actually had to say it out loud, and then I was like, oh, why did I do that? Mm-hmm. But someone has at Pete Dodd also, which
and
they haven't tweeted since like 2009, but Twitter's not doing anything about it. But yeah, so find me on Twitter. If I'm ever writing anything or on podcasts or whatever, it shows up there. If you awesome. Like, I do.
And Rich Grisham is at Rich Grisham. He's not at Rich Grisham. He's correct. Just at Rich Grisham.
That's right. Exactly. Thank you.
Yeah. Anything going on with you coming up here?
Well, it's the Steam Summer Sale. And so Out of the Park Baseball is 50% off and Franchise Hockey Manager 4 is 75% off. So if you like me and you like TJ Lowerman and you like Adam Burnett and you like Chris Jardine, Snagglejay, we all work for Out of the Park Developments and we all help make these games. And if you buy them, we get to keep doing it. So
I thought you were going to say if you buy them, you get money. I don't think it works that way.
If you don't until you stop buying and then we all get fired.
Then you're fired.
We don't want that. Yeah, we don't want that. We love doing it. I mean, all joking aside, this has been so much fun making these games and being on that side of the process and working with Major League Baseball. Brian, I'm going to the MLB All-Star game in a few weeks. I'm going to Washington, D.C. Me as a partner of Major League Baseball. How cool is that?
Nice.
You know, I've had to work a lot to get to that point, and we work really hard, and it's a lot of fun. Mike Susick and Ryan Lewis are also part of that team. All friends of this show. That's the best part about it, is these are people that I've been working with for years, and we all contribute to make it happen, and it's a lot of fun. So if you are playing Out of the Park Baseball, thank you. If you're not, go check it out. If you're an Origin Access member, you don't even have to buy it. You can just play it. It's $5. So the best thing that you could do to support this show and support all of us is to play Out of the Park Baseball and Franchise Hockey Manager.
All right. And I am Brian Weed, I Pasta Padre. I never mentioned that in the show. And so if you don't know who I am, I've been talking on this podcast.
If you don't know who Brian is, you have not made it to this point of the show anyway.
Yeah. Check me out on Sporting News and PastaPadre.com and PastaPadre on Twitter and PastaPadre everywhere. Also, we really appreciate it if you leave us a good review for the podcast on iTunes or on whatever platform you listen to the podcast. That's awesome. We appreciate it. And we'll be back next week with another episode for you. Until then, take care.